and welcome to NextPod, VP NextGen's podcast made for veterinary students and young professionals who want to know what's next. I'm your host, Sarah Said, and this month's topic is based around being an Army veterinarian. To talk on the subject, we have a retired Army veterinarian with experience in different areas of the field, Dr. Tanera Kroom. Welcome, Dr. Kroom.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really excited to talk to your followers and to explain some stuff about this vet field.
That's awesome. Cool. So, I mean, we'd love to hear about you. And if you don't mind, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of got to where you are today?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to take it back to the beginning, right? You know, I was born, I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I had two teachers for parents. We'll just say that, because anybody who's had parents, teachers for parents, know that it's a whole different world there. You know, it was like A's, B's, and you better see your way out of here with those C's.
I'm jokingly now, yes.
I say that jokingly, but it's so true. Like, C's were not, you know, okay. They were just average. And our parents knew right from the beginning, my two sisters and I, that we are so much more than average. So high expectations from the very beginning. And that's really what got me going, to know that I could do something that could be so tough as getting into a very, very competitive veterinary school. Also, my dad, he specifically taught the natural sciences, whereas my mother taught political science. So between political science and the natural sciences, I definitely skewed towards nature, animals, you know, and being outside. I love it, which kind of contributes to one of the reasons why I love the mobile service, which is something I do now, but we can talk about that more in depth later. But yeah, I would say being raised by my parents, went to a very good, you know, elementary school. It was a Catholic school. We had uniforms. Hey, what can I say? And so there were very high expectations there as well. And I found, you know, turtles and crossing the street, and I would bring them home and, you know, rehabilitate them. And I mean, I know this is probably a story of similar story with veterinarians, but you know, you bring the animals home and you rehabilitate them. That's what you do when you're a future veterinarian.
Cool. So did you go, what university did you attend for vet school?
Well, yep. For undergrad, I went to the amazing Xavier University, which is in New Orleans. So I left from Michigan and went way down south to New Orleans. That was pre-Katrina. And so the city was really, you know, amazing back then. And then for vet school, I decided to stay down south, and I slid on over to Alabama to go to Tuskegee School of Veterinary Medicine. I was accepted at a couple other vet schools, including in my own state of Michigan, Michigan State, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to the only historically Black college.
Oh, awesome.
School, and that's what I decided to do. And it was amazing. You know, the family community that was there at the vet school, because, you know, getting into vet school is very competitive. It was, and it still is. You know, they have 60 to 100 students that they accept at most vet schools across the country, and it's hard, it's tough to get in. But, you know, being at Tuskegee just really made me feel just so comfortable being with so many other people that look like me, and also a variety of others that did not look like me. Definitely Tuskegee is the most diverse. We have Black, white, Hispanic, West Indian, you know, everybody. And it was so great.
That's great. So after that, kind of, what was your, did you go straight to becoming an Army vet, or did you kind of test out the waters just like in a practice? Like, what was your trajectory?
Well, you know, during vet school, like, I think probably during my third year of vet school, when we started doing clinics and stuff, I was like, okay, I'm not really into this clinic stuff too much. You know, I mean, it's the aspect of veterinary medicine that most people know about, but getting into those, like, what are they called? Additional classes, like when you get to the higher levels and everything, you could pick and choose. They gave me a chance to really see what these other different specialties were about and learn about them. Also, we had a visit by the esteemed Colonel Nathaniel Powell. He is this just amazing, statuesque, Black colonel that is a veterinarian who came to the school, and I was like, wow, you know, like I was so amazed and so like just admiring of him, you know. It wasn't like, oh, like fawning, but it was more like, wow, you know, like just really, really proud of what he'd done. And also the knowledge that I can do that too. I also thought, going into the military, the Army, which was my first job out of vet school, I did decide to go ahead and go into the Army first. And he was really, Colonel Powell was really one of the ones that really helped me to decide. At that point, finishing up vet school, I had quote unquote leverage at that point where I could either decide to go into the military, you know, or not. And so since they did want me to come in, I was able to choose my location of where I wanted to be stationed out of the ones that were available, as opposed to just being appointed like here, you're going there. So I chose to go to Northern California, and I was stationed at Travis Air Force Base, where I was attending veterinarian at Vivarium. And that's different than the other veterinarian who was on the base, who worked at the clinic and worked with the military working dog. So I can go more into that, you know.
Yeah, of course. No, like that sounds so interesting, because I was just telling you like 10 minutes ago that I know nothing about this side of the vet world. And I think it's so cool because it's like a whole other world that, you know, people don't talk about maybe as much. And you know, it takes a really tough person to be a vet to begin with, and then on top of that to kind of go into the Army side of it as well. So you know, kudos to you. Can you also just please share with us like what you think, based off of your experience and stuff like that, is kind of the most important thing for people to know about being an Army veterinarian?
Okay, so I mean, veterinarians, you know, in vet school, we vets, we're all different types of personalities. You know, some of us are really shy. Some of us are really outgoing. Some knew for sure they wanted to go right into a clinic. And, you know, some are very sure about those things. But as far as the Army, there's really no, unless you had already been in ROTC or something, which I had not been. I had formerly not been in any military stuff myself. Definitely veterans run through my family on the crew and the grant sides, but I had never been in myself. So one of the big major things that I had to deal with when I got in was the knowledge that I was an officer, and now I was responsible for 2, 3, 4 enlisted soldiers with full lives. And one big thing is that, and a lot of times these soldiers had already been in for like 8 years, you know, and so here's this new officer coming in, like, you know, telling them what to do. But that's not what I did. One of the main things, you know, to answer your question about being in the military, especially if you're coming in fresh, is that humble leadership. That's actually a talk that I plan to add to my repertoire in the future about humble leadership, not only in the military, but also just as a veterinarian, because so I had an NCO, that's a non-commissioned officer. So he's like the higher end of on the enlisted side. So you've got your officers and you're enlisted, and you know, the enlisted all have to, you know, salute to us officers. So, you know, you've got someone again who's in for 10, 12 years or whatever, and we got this new captain coming in, like, hey, Captain Croom, you know? And it's just, yeah, it's about that humility but it's a balance of humility and the leadership. You know, you have to come in. You can't be, you know, a wilting flower, I guess you could say, and not be able to, you know, stand behind things you say, but it also has to be in a way like you're learning. Like I was learning about the military as I was coming in, expecting to be knowledgeable on the veterinary side, but still learning the new stuff from the military. So I mean, yeah, humble leadership is a major aspect of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love how you like were saying that you're still learning, because like, you know, you do undergrad, then you do vet school, and you come out and you're like, yeah, I'm a doctor. And obviously, you know, you're gonna learn more in practice. But the fact that you put yourself in a different environment that was completely different from what the things you've learned in the past is awesome, because it's really helped you kind of, I guess, you know, round out all these different skills that like that could help you, you know, with your career in the future. And clearly it seems as though it has, because, you know, one of my questions actually for you was that, like, you know, obviously now you're a mobile, you have your own mobile practice, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, in a business on its own. And did the military and the skills that you learned kind of there help you gain like skills, like kind of take risks and to do all these things?
I would say, I mean, to an extent, yeah, mm-hmm. I would say to an extent. I mean, the military, you know, I guess you could say accelerated some of the skills that I already had. Again, just bringing my parents back into it. Like, really, I learned more from them as a foundation that allowed the military to, you know, improve me, you know. And so I wouldn't even say that it was mostly the military that gave me that.
It was just like an add-on that
it was.
Yeah,
exactly right. It was an add-on. And so let's see, but as far as the link between my time in the military and my current, you know, I'm just very entrepreneurial anyway. That's what I learned and realized about myself over the years. And so the military didn't really contribute to that per se. But what it did contribute to is allowing me to have these leadership skills to, you know, run my own business. I mean, a lot of veterinarians that work in vet clinics, they don't own the clinic. They work for maybe another vet or maybe even a non-vet who owns the clinic, or it could be a corporation. There are quite a few corporations out there now where you just go in and it's a 9-to-5 and vets love it. You know, nothing wrong with that. You don't have to worry about the overhead. You don't have to worry about employees and all that stuff. So I would say that the, you know, chain of command layout of the military did contribute to my leadership as a business owner, because I use that same chain of command. I'm still humble. I still know that a vet tech that's working with me may know 10 things I don't know, or that I've never heard or learned about. You know, like, you never want to go in like you're just this big wig, because guess what? You're not. Okay. You could have a vet assistant or a groomer who has had some experiences that you've never had and will contribute to the overall business. They may be able to come in and say, you know what, maybe we should do this with the clients, or maybe we should offer this. And, you know, for that owner who doesn't listen, I feel sorry for them, because they're missing out on a lot by not listening to their people. And that's a big thing that I did learn in the military.
That's so cool. Well, what is it like though? Like, what's like a normal quote unquote day kind of as a vet working in that environment? What would you do?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you exactly what I did. So there were two types of veterinarians on a base, on Travis Air Force Base. There was the vet who worked at the base clinic. Not every base has a clinic, but Travis does. And so she would work in the clinic, and she would take care of the military working dogs. And she would also go off base and do like food safety. Food safety is a really, really big part of veterinary medicine in the Army. And a lot of people don't know that. They're like, what do veterinarians do in the Army? I hear that all the time. And food safety is a big one, because actually, when I went for basic training down in Fort Sam, Houston in Texas, we all got together. It was like AMED. So it was all medical groups. So it was veterinarians, nurses, doctors, dentists. We were all together doing like the general stuff. Then we broke off into our specialties. Guess where they put us veterinarians?
Where did you guys go?
In the freezer with cuts of meat. Sides of beef, cuts of slabs of, you know, ribs and stuff. And that was so that we really could learn. You need to learn the body parts, you know? I mean, and even though I'd already been in vet school and everything, since the food safety is a big part of what veterinarians do, so like that other vet that was on the base, she would go off and she would inspect meat that was to come back to the base and make sure that the meat is safe, sanitary, and appropriate for the other soldiers on the base. So I didn't do that part of the job, but yeah, the basic training, we were in these freezer coats, you know, like in the freezer with the cuts of meat, like boom, right there. Like, what's this muscle? Like, what's, you know, crazy. But what I did specifically, so there was that other vet and then there was me. I was in this vivarium, which just means living place for living things. And it was attached to the main hospital there at Travis Air Force Base. And so we had our own HVAC and stuff like that. So, you know, no mixing of the HVAC. But we had mostly pigs there. And pigs, as you may know, are very similar to humans in their body systems and organ systems and everything like that. So we had pigs, and my vet techs, who were also soldiers, we would anesthetize the pigs so that the Air Force doctors, human doctors, could come down and practice various techniques, surgical techniques, before they went overseas. Because, you know, you don't want to go overseas and be practicing on your comrades, you know. You've got to practice these surgical procedures, laparoscopic surgeries, and appendectomies and different things like that. And then afterwards, we would humanely euthanize the pigs, and it was state of the art. Everything was state of the art as far as the anesthesia machines and everything like that. So that was one really big thing. We facilitated the training of the human doctors so that they would be prepared before they went overseas. And then one other type of animal that we had there in the vivarium was the cutest little ferrets.
Oh.
Ferrets. I know. Who would have thought that, right?
Yeah.
Ferrets, we would anesthetize them mildly, and then the pediatric residents. So we would have like the Air Force pediatric residents who were preparing to become, who were also preparing to go overseas. And we would anesthetize the ferrets, and then they would come down and practice placing a breathing tube in the ferrets. And that would simulate a baby or a small child.
Wow.
And so we did those kinds of trainings with the pigs and with the ferrets, and we had a great time back there. We could talk a little bit more about this, but my soldiers, you know, they call me Captain CJ. I was married back then. They call me Captain CJ. And they're like, Captain CJ, come back here. Because, you know, again, with that humble leadership, I love to have fun. Get the job done, but also have fun. Hey, has anybody ever coined that phrase?
Yeah, that sounds really like a good slogan or something.
Let me write that down right now.
You know what? You coined that phrase just now.
That's right. You think I'm joking. I'm writing this down right now.
That's so funny. That's awesome. But what was training like? Because you mentioned training really quickly. Like, is it like a week long, month long? Like, what do you do?
Man, shoot. That was so long ago. I think I want to say, let's see. The training with the other groups of medical people was probably within a couple few days. And then the split off maybe with the detailed specific training was probably more so a couple weeks. And then, maybe like a total of 4 weeks or something, or maybe six.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's fairly short considering like you're new and all that.
Yes. Yeah. And it was a little different too, because, you know, you always see on TV, like, get on the ground, soldier.
Yes.
Give me 50, you know, give me 50 push-ups or whatever. And so here's the thing, you know, again, we were officers, and really the people who were up doing the training and stuff were enlisted. So even though, so it was kind of like role reversal of, you know, they weren't really like, get on a soldier, like, get on the floor, but they were still like, I remember one time, I don't know what I was thinking, but all right, everybody on the podcast, don't tell nobody this, okay? But I had, you know, like I had like a headscarf on, like to lay down, and the next, and it was black, so, you know, it was the same color as my hair, and I went out to the like morning lineup and everything. And I guess it was obvious. I guess it was visible, because they were like, that is not acceptable. You got to take that thing off. I was like, oh my God. Okay. So I took it off and like flung it to the side and got back in line. But that just let me know, like, come on, like, just be straight, you know, everything according to the rules, you know.
Yeah, very, very.
Yes. I mean, but the training was, it was strenuous. The working out part, I mean, the jogging, whew, the you know, 2 miles is what we had to do for the actual training. Mm-hmm. And so, and then also push-ups and sit-ups. So we had to do a certain amount based on our age and weight and stuff like that. So pretty strenuous. I mean,
yeah, definitely mm-hmm. different than going to vet school, just like yes. in class and doing labs and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So what kind of characteristics do you think somebody, I don't want to say the word need, but would, you know, basically need to, in order to be successful or maybe to enjoy this kind of, that kind of environment and that kind of training and everything? Like,
I would say, you know, an openness to new things, first of all, and a willingness to overcome that fear that you're going to naturally have. Like, you want to have some fear in your life, you know, like, not like pandemic fear or anything like that, but just fear of like not really knowing what's going to happen, knowing that you have, you know, knowing that you have the skills, right? Not like feeling like you just don't have the skills, but just like not knowing what to expect, that fear of like
the
military. Yeah. Yeah. And how everything is set up in the military, especially not having been in it before. I'm like, what do I expect? You know, so yeah, people definitely need to have an openness, willingness to try something that's a little scary or a little fearful, humility, even in all of your knowledge. Yeah, just leadership skills to where you can learn, you know, pretty quickly and then pass that information on down. You have to be willing and able to give direction. You got to be ready for some pushback, you know, with people that you, your subordinates potentially. Mm-hmm. And you just, I don't know. I mean, I think it'd probably be great to be friendly too.
Of course. Yeah. Like a social skills in general. Yeah. For sure. Cause you're meeting new people and just throwing yourself in that new environment for sure. So when you applied and stuff like that, like you said that you had different options, but is it like a difficult application process or?
It is definitely very comprehensive, you know, your whole life, you know, so many papers, a lot of paperwork. I mean, assuming that it's the same, you know, for me, that was back in 2001. So, you know, that was a couple few years ago. So things may have changed, but I doubt that it's less. You know, paperwork, if anything, you know, they ask you about everything. Like, have you, things from your youth that you're like, scratch your head, like, oh my God, did I do like anything that you feel like they may be able to find? Like, you know how now they say, don't do anything on social media because it'll always be there, always be visible. That's the kind of thing where you're kind of like, the questions are asked, it's like, oh God, back in.
Intense background check sort of thing, but like online as well, or just personal things.
Yeah, yep, exactly. And you know, they ask you first. So that's what I'm saying. Like, have you like reaching back into your youth, like, oh my God, you know, I remember this. Like, are they gonna, like, was that sealed or?
That must be so hard to, yeah, to know what exactly what to say. Like, how do I know if this is what they're looking for or if it's like mm-hmm. a problem or not?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here, people.
So like, was it for a couple years? How long did you stay there? Was there like a contract type thing?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it was like a, yes, definitely like a contract. Like, do not expect to go into the Army Veterinary Corps without signing several documents that says you're in, you know, this is where you're stationed, this is the date you're going to be there. I would say the whole application process overall probably took at least 3 months, you know. Yeah, just wow. Yeah, I'd say at least 3 months. Get overall
to confirm things and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And so if somebody's like in vet school or maybe even just working in the clinic and they're like, I want to try this, I don't know, I'm scared, I'm nervous, but I really think it'd be cool. Like, they just can't decide. What would you say to somebody who's in that position, who's unsure?
You know, the military is different now. I think that you always want to look at, you know, who the commander in chief is at the moment. I'll just say that I probably wouldn't currently I'm kind of split on that. I would say that I wouldn't currently recommend it just because things are so tenuous right now with everything, but that also too, if you don't take that chance, you'll never know. So I would say, because even if you start applying, you could start applying, go through 2 months and be like, you know what, this ain't even, and then you could just cut out. I mean, assuming you haven't signed anything that's, you know, and you're just doing the application process, I would say if you're thinking about it, wondering about it, and really, really intrigued by it, to go ahead and start the process.
And like look into it, maybe ask some people and who's done it, or yeah, just
see. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm actually putting together I already have a future veterinarian program that I've been working for the past several years, but now I'm really working hard on the virtual aspect so that students who are looking into this field can have one-on-one with me, and people can go, you know, right to my website for that. More information than that.
That's awesome. That sounds like a great thing. Like, honestly, social media and online is great for that. Like, you can message anybody in two seconds and, you know, form a new connection and network and stuff like that. So that's really cool. And so just, is there any like misconception or stigma or something that you've noticed people have, like if you tell them, hey, like I was a vet in the army, like do people have this idea that you think, you know, is not true, or like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The first thing is that a lot of people don't know we exist. Okay. So there's that. Like, oh, I never knew there was veterinarians in the army. And then usually, you know, because I'm a question asker, anyone in my future vet program knows I'm not just going to stand up here and just give you all the information. I'm going to ask you some questions. And so, you know, I would probably ask, okay, so I just lost my train of thought a little bit. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. It's okay.
That'll be part of what she can probably cut out. Let me see. What was I about to say?
It was for the, wow, me too. No, the stigma, the misconceptions.
All right. Okay, maybe I can even start this whole part over. Okay, so one of the biggest misconceptions about Army veterinarians that I get from people is they don't know we exist, basically. They don't know we exist, and if they maybe think they might know we exist, then I usually ask, okay, so what do you think veterinarians do in the military? And, you know, I was like, just think about it for a minute. Like, what do you think? And then they'll usually come up with, oh, military working dogs. Do you work with the German Shepherds and the working dogs and the mascots? A lot of people will say, like, the mascots, right? Like the horses and whatever they used to have back in the day. I don't know if they really have very many mascots left, but yeah. So I would say the biggest misconception is that they didn't know we exist or think we just do like working with the military working dogs. They usually do not know anything about the food safety aspect. And they also usually don't know too much about what I did, which was more on the research and development and training side versus the veterinarian in the clinic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. And so throughout your whole experience in the Army and just application process till you were over, like how did you feel? Like, what was your mental health like? What was your state of mind? What was going on?
Okay, so I would say during that whole application process, my state of mind was excellent. I had just, you know, finished at an amazing vet school, Tuskegee. I had the support of both of my parents, as well as several other veterans in my family who were like, yes, you know, Tanara, this is so great. And I remember getting started running. Remember I told you we had them working out and stuff, running up and down my street, my hometown in Grand Rapids, just getting all tired and like, you know, going a quarter of a mile and being like, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to make the 2 miles? But I was very blessed and still am to have that kind of family support. I know everyone does not have that. You know, that's huge when you're talking about, you know, mental health and stability and everything like that, because as veterinarians, we give a lot. We really do. Even in the Army, you know, we give a lot because we always want to first do no harm, just like our human, you know, doctor counterparts. And we always want to just treat that animal, wherever it is, from the smallest little rat up to, you know, a huge Clydesdale horse. You know, you want to treat that animal with the utmost of respect. And so you're giving a lot. So, you know, to be able to have that space to give, it's important that your mental health is together. And so I was blessed to have that.
Yeah. And did you feel like that even at the end? Like, did you feel like there was times where you felt maybe really stressed out or down, or was it usually like a good kind of growing experience for you?
It was definitely a good growing experience. Let me see. Was there anything? Yeah.
The only reason I'm asking is pretty much because, you know, of course, mental health is a huge topic, right? Students, yeah. Well as vets and stuff. And I'm just, yeah, I was just really curious to see like the, you know, how does it vary in different areas and stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, okay. So, I mean, for me, it wasn't so much specifically the veterinary. I know we're talking about Army veterinarian, but just in general, going into the military, I think I had, you know, I have an older sister who was also in the military. And so she's a veteran. She's in the Gulf War. So she's like 4 years older than I am. And, you know, we always hear about some of the issues that women veterans deal with when they're in the military, right? And I mean, I'm not going to be specific about them, but she dealt with some of those things. And so that was something that I was thinking about during my time, like wanting to, you know, not have to deal with that myself, you know, wanting to always feel like, you know, I felt protective of her, you know, even though she was already out, just knowing what she went through mm-hmm. was something, you know, on my mind. And, you know, because my whole family, you know, kind of, you know, crowded around her to make sure that she was okay. And therefore making sure that I was okay, you mm-hmm. know? So I would say, yeah, family history of some trauma in the military is probably the main thing that affected my mental health.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Wow, well, thank you so much for sharing that, because I'm sure a lot of people, you know, go through similar things, and it's like to hear somebody else that has gone through whatever difficulty or challenge in life, it's like, it's definitely, you know, relatable. And on that note, can you, do you have a story that, you know, of your time in the military that you can share that, like, you know, really stood out to you, like a time that.
Let's see. You know, I mentioned before how we as officers, when you're a veterinarian, you come in as an officer, you come as a first lieutenant, and then you immediately, after you go through your stuff, you your ceremony and everything, then you're immediately promoted to a captain. So you're coming in as a captain. And so, like I said, you come right in immediately having subordinates. Like, what? Subordinates? And then one other thing was you also may have civilian subordinates. So I had some of those. And so one little story I have that's, you know, people want to hear real stories, right? Okay. So one story I had is when one weekend, one of our civilian, he was like on the janitorial staff, and he got put in jail. And he called me, or he notified me in some way, shape, or form. And I remember, like, I was still so new and so young. And like, I found out that he was in jail, and I'm like, I didn't do anything. Like, I didn't really know what the next step was or what I should do. And so it was like, I don't know, it was like Friday or something. And so came back in on Monday, and I got reamed because Captain Kroom, you just let one of our people like just languish in jail over the weekend. I was like, oh my God, you know? And so, like, you know, I still think about that because, like, obviously I should have made a different decision. That was obvious. But then, you know, too, on the empathetic side, you know, empathy is definitely another one of those characteristics or traits, like you asked me about earlier, that vets should have. Not only for the furry ones though, you know, so that's really a big part of what I learned through that experience. You know, and then I got a chance to apologize to him, you know, after he came back and he was like, oh no, Captain Crew, it's okay. And I was like, no, it wasn't, you know, so good
experience. That's, yeah, definitely. And yeah, I love you said that empathy is so important because I think in every field, but particularly, especially with vets, it's like a huge thing. So thank you so much for taking the time to share your advice and experiences with us and our listeners. Really appreciate it. But we want to end every little podcast with like a short Q&A that showcases you. So they're literally like this short answer, short question, nothing crazy. And so the first one is kind of, what is your ultimate career goal at this point?
My ultimate career goal is to be on some sandy black beaches while I do my future veterinarian program virtually to students all over the world. Awesome. I definitely want a big RV, a luxury RV to do that in as well.
That's amazing. I love that. That's one of the best answers, I think. And do you have a quote or like philosophy that you live by that's helped you kind of through your life?
Well, you know, I kind of mentioned that earlier in our podcast, and I was like, oh, I should make, but you know, it really does exemplify me and my attitude and my personality, whereas get the job done so you can have fun. I mean, you know, if you're in a job, whether it's veterinary or any other industry, if you're not having fun, and I mean, granted, I understand we sometimes have to have jobs. We got to have a job. We got to live. Sometimes it's not always, but as far as your major goal, if it's not something that you really can have fun with, you need to keep looking, okay? So get the job done so you can have fun.
That's so good. And so who inspires you to continue to make a change within the industry and grow?
Who really inspires me to keep on keeping on and changing this industry are the young black youth who don't necessarily get to see black veterinarians very often. I mean, I know we've got a couple of shows now that do show black veterinarians and things like that, but just, you wanna be able to go into the actual vet clinic and see a black vet. You know, it's something that other cultures maybe, that, you know, is not something you necessarily think about. You know, you go in and you see somebody like yourself that looks like yourself, and you're like, okay. I mean, and it's not even necessarily always conscious. It's sometimes just subconscious, especially for the youth. It's like, okay, that's something I could do too, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't see anyone that looks like yourself, it can be tough, or subconsciously you're thinking, okay, the only veterinarians are white, and this is a very, very white industry. And so that's one of the reasons, as well as those youths who I see when I was doing the live, you know, in-person future vet presentations, and I would see them and like, you know, they don't always have all the same resources. I know we're seeing that a lot now with the virtual schooling and everything, and kind of the haves and the have nots, like those who have, you know, Wi-Fi and just, you know, they're good, you know, whereas there's a huge swath of kids that don't have it. And so those are the ones who really are motivating me to keep pushing on. Future vet program, they're, to me, they're right up there, the same level as the animals.
Oh, that's amazing. And so this is not on the list, but I'm genuinely curious. Yeah. I don't even know if it's a stupid question, but you are a vet and a vet, right?
I'm a vet, so vet.
Does that ever, like, does that come up? Like, do you have, when you explain to people the vet thing, because when I was writing things out, I was like, wait.
She's both. That's awesome. Like, usually, like, somebody, like, click in somebody's head, they're like, oh, you're a vet. And I'm like, yes, I am.
That's so cool.
I know, I love it. I definitely use that, you know, as part of my brand, too. You know, my brand is Dr. Kroom Army Vet. And, you know, I have created my own brand of pet CBD, and it's called Dr. Kroom Army Vet. And any other products that I use will be under that name as well. So everyone will always know, you know, who I am. They'll know that it's legitimate, that whatever it is that I'm putting out has integrity. And, yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Cause I know you also have your mobile practice and all these amazing things going. That's so cool. But so where can people find you, like on social media, online, like your, you know, website, if they want to contact you or learn more about the things that you do?
Okay. Absolutely. Well, you know, just keep in mind Dr. Kroom Army Vet, because that's my name across all social media. So if you want to find my Facebook business page, you'll go to Dr. Kroom Army Vet and you'll see me. That's actually one of the best places that people can go, is probably my Facebook business page, Dr. Kroom Army Vet, but also on Instagram. I'm at Dr. Kroom Army Vet. And I mean, even like Pinterest, you know, it's going to be Dr. Kroom Army Vet. So but my actual website is drkroom.com, drcroom.com. And that's where people can, you know, get appointments. They can purchase the CBD, and they can kind of see what I'm up to as well.
That's so cool. Thank you. And yeah, I mean, we'll obviously be tagging you as well, so everybody can easily find your information. So yeah, thanks again, Dr. Kroom. We really appreciate you being with us, and a big thank you to our Next Pod listeners. Remember, you are the future. Join us next month for another in-depth talk.